Hey guys, how's it going? Welcome to the Oilfield Basics Discover podcast episode. I'm your host, Derek Craig, and this is the podcast where we learn something new about our incredible industry on every single episode. This is episode 39, so we're nearing that episode 40 mark, and as I alluded on the previous podcast, last week's episode, that 40 is going to bring about a couple changes, a couple big changes in a very good direction. And one of those things, just logistically, I can't really say what all is happening just yet. We'll save that for number 40. But logistically, I'll give you a heads up that our podcast will, at least for until announced otherwise, will be being released on Mondays come episode 40 and past, again, until we would say otherwise. So currently, as you know, they're being released on Thursdays. Well, that's going to change, so it'll be Monday. But there shouldn't really be a gap week with the way I'm recording these. So it'll just be released Monday instead of next Thursday. So you guys can keep an eye out for that. You'll get it a couple days early. It might be like Christmas. I don't know. But just a heads up on a couple of the logistics there. And it'll be a pretty exciting announcement whenever we get to that. So look forward to next week's announcement. Okay, announcement or schedule changing to Mondays. The other things I had to announce, I think I can't remember if I've announced this in previous videos or not. I think I might have on one, but or episodes, not videos. But did just do a video with Renegade, and there's more in the trunk line to come out about some of their new product lines and cool things that they got going over there. One of them being microannuluses, microannuli, whatever the plural is, whatever. I still haven't figured that one out. Despite already doing the video, but that video just came out, and they've got a pretty cool new tool that they're debuting this month, October. So pretty cool. We go over that in that video, and also a little bit more background information about what a microannulus is and how they get there, causes, remediation, just a very broad overview of that. And like I said, more of those types of episodes are coming in collaboration with Renegade. So keep an eye out for that, for those. I'm actually probably going to start working on a couple of the extra other ones today. So hopefully, also just want to remind everybody of the economics course that we have up now, whether it's for you or maybe, you know, a friend that this would be very good for. It basically shows you how to create an economic model for oil and gas operations. So, you know, whether it's a development project, or that's actually going to be kind of the topic of our next episode, episode 40, development, strategic development, business development kind of stuff. But you know, whether it's that or just any type of economic investment relating to the industry, it really shows you how to go through and build that model from scratch in Excel and truly understand what all of these words mean and just all the different metrics that we use to risk and determine which projects to go ahead and go forth with. So it's a pretty cool course that's on our website, oilfieldbasics.com. Everything I've mentioned, it all can be found on our website, so check that out. Also, I encourage everybody to leave reviews, and I will try and read them as I see them come in on the show. So please feel free to do that. And check us out. Check out oilfieldbasics.com. Check out our YouTube channel, LinkedIn, everything. But you guys all know that. You're all pretty faithful listeners. But without further ado, today we've got a pretty cool topic, and I should have teased this at the beginning. I completely forgot that I normally do that. But we're going to be talking about cybersecurity. And so this is a topic that we definitely for sure have not really covered in this podcast series on these previous 38 episodes. We have not touched this. And Matt Malone reached out to me, a month or what, I don't know how long the timeline's been, but a little bit ago, and got him on the schedule, and he's got a lot of expertise in this area, and he's going to really open our eyes to some of the risks that we have as an industry concerning cybersecurity, and also just a pretty broad overview, you know, talking about our systems that we use, common attack types. So he's really just going to orient us to this part of the industry, and maybe something that we need to be have wider eyes about going forward. So pretty interesting stuff coming up here. And Matt's already on the phone. How you doing today, Matt?
Hey, doing great, Derek. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I'm pretty excited about this. I know that actually, and this, I guess, isn't incredibly relevant to like systems hacking, but I mean, kind of is. But I mean, our website's even been, you know, experienced this kind of, you know, some form of attack, right? So I've taken attempts to protect my, you know, Oilfield Basics from it, and I'm sure that there's a lot more opportunities out there for hackers than just a website. And I think we're going to really dive into that today, talking about the systems that we have that run everything and how vulnerable they are or not vulnerable, or you know, how to go about protecting them, whatever. But you got a pretty cool background, it sounds like. You're director of BD, business development and energy at MSI, which is Mission Secure Inc., right? You've got You're an Aggie. Yeah. I'll throw that one out there. So A&M. So I'm sure
that's
you're squirting.
Right. I accept all forms of hate mail. It's all good.
Yeah.
Keep sending it my way.
I'm sure you've got that ring on right now. So I, out of our listeners, you've either got a bunch of people that's incredibly like all open ears now, or they're like, oh, an Aggie.
That's right. Yeah. It's okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We can turn off, but, you know, more half your audience. That's no big deal.
But you've also got a pretty good, a pretty interesting looking background. I was scrolling through your LinkedIn and Honeywell. So I'm sure we probably all have heard of Honeywell. They've got their hand in almost everything. It seems kind of like GE, NOV, and even in the Navy and some cool underwater training, it looks like. So pretty cool stuff, man. You want to kind of fill us in a little bit more about your background?
Yeah. So I did 8 years in the U.S. Navy. I was a deep sea diver and a bomb tech, and I got to do, I mean, that was probably the funnest 8 years of my entire life. Getting to deploy, getting to blow stuff up, getting to dive into, you know, muddy water and just having the time of my life. I got a couple deployments to Iraq. And so all that was a blast. And, you know, my wife and I got to the point where we're like, all right, you know, it's time to get off the bus. And the only thing we knew was that we wanted to head back to Texas. Both of us are from Texas. I grew up in Odessa. She grew up in Longview.
Yeah.
And so that's where my job search for the real world, you know, kind of started. And luck would have it that I knew some folks at NOV that were willing to bring me down and interview me. And that's when I first started cutting my teeth on the oil business, which is really bizarre considering the fact I grew up in it in Odessa. I wasn't the guy that was roughnecking at 18 years old, you know, although that was I kind of look on back on that with regret. You know, I was slacking off as a 16-year-old instead of earning really good money.
You're just playing with bombs offshore instead.
Yeah. Right.
You have your own perks, man. No regrets.
I was with NOV for a time, working in the upstream, calling on a big, mostly on the rig up yards around the Houston area at the time. Some of those have gone away, but some of them are still here. And then I moved on to a company called Honeywell, like you mentioned, and that's where I learned the controls business. Most of my clients at that time were in downstream automation. I had some midstream gas processing clients, but basically they're running plants that are trying to chemically alter some type of petrochemical product into something else. Mm. And they want to do this by remote means, automatic means to increase efficiencies. So, you know, they can make more money. That's really the long of the short of it when it comes to automation. Mm-hmm. And around that same time, Honeywell got into the business of industrial cybersecurity. And when they first made that first push, my first thought was, well, why would anybody, you know, want to hack a chemical plant? I mean, that sounds just even when saying that out loud now, it almost sounds dull. Why would you do that? I mean, you see all the movies with the, you know, the black screens and the green characters, and they're trying to steal all this money from the IMF or some large bank, and that seems really cool. But what are you going to get out of an industrial plant? And so the more I looked into it, the more I was taught about cybersecurity, the more I just kind of fell in love with it. And partly because if you don't know, you know now, there is a huge demand for it in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And I moved on from Honeywell to where I am right now, a company called Mission Secure. In my opinion anyway, it is the top tier industrial cybersecurity company that's out there. Our patents are fantastic. Our technology is unsurpassed out there right now. We've got some great contracts going on with clients that span the breadth of the stream, everything from the wellhead down to the terminal. Very and cool. As well as we've got, some of our clients are within the U.S. government as well. They see the value in this product, and they're starting to implement it on a lot of different places that are helping keeping, you know, soldiers, sailors, airmen, and marine safe as well.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that definitely validates your product. But there, I actually have a family member. When you're talking about the chemical plants, one of my close family members works in a chemical plant, and over the last year, I think it was even longer than that, they got hacked, shut everything down. I mean, it was just disastrous to their revenue. They were down for quite a while because nobody knew how to handle it. Nobody knew what to do, and then basically the fallout afterwards. there's like a lot of the computer systems and everything are just shut off to the external world. So I don't know how everything's sitting now, but they definitely felt the effects of that for quite a while. So pretty important that we talk about this kind of stuff and figure out how we can protect ourselves, because a lot of times you probably don't learn the lessons until it's too late. Don't realize you're a target until, you know, you are the target.
Yeah, you know, and I probably jumped ahead a little bit. You know, when you hear cybersecurity every day, right, to the layman or just the person passing by, your first thought is probably, oh, okay, what major corporation had a data breach, right? I mean, you can't go a week without hearing about somebody from, if it's Target or Yahoo, mm-hmm. or some other, you know, Fortune 100 company that has a data breach. The type of cybersecurity I'm dealing with and what we protect is industrial cybersecurity. So all of these automation type systems that I was discussing earlier, they're all run off of computer systems.
Oh, yeah.
They're in mostly what's called a Purdue model type of network. We use the phrase OT instead of IT. OT meaning operational technology. We're constantly doing something. And the Purdue model is just distributed control from something at top, right? So if you think that everything on what we call level 4 is your typical enterprise network, that's your email, that's SAP, that's Oracle, then you go into a level called 3.5 or DMZ, which is supposed to firewall, separate your enterprise network from your industrial network, your OT network. And then from level 3, 2, 1, all the way down, the type of control gets smaller and smaller and smaller until you get to level 0, which is a lot of the I&E and electrical guys out there are going to know this. This is what your transmitter is, right? This is something that is taking a temperature. It is taking pressure. It is measuring flow. It is basically passing data up that tree from when I went from level 3 all the way down to level 0. It's passing information on the way up, and it's receiving commands. So let's say that a pressure sensor sends, okay, this is my vessel is pressure X. It sends that up to the controller. The controller performs its logic, and it says, ooh, pressure X is a little too high than what we like. I'm going to send this signal down to valve number, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, and we're going to reduce the pressure of that vessel just a little bit. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they have certain set points within these controllers that can help manage flow, pressure, temperature, because as we know, anytime you're trying to make some sort of product in the petrochemical, you know, midstream gas process industry, mm-hmm. all that is, a lot of it, first off, is proprietary. Second of all, the smallest changes can affect the quality, i.e. that's going to affect your pocketbook, right? Mm-hmm. So just as you said earlier when you discussed your family member when their plant got shut down, everybody's got a day rate in this business. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, trying to keep your bit turning to the right, or if you're making plastic pellets that mm-hmm. you're going to sell to a manufacturer, you have a revenue goal per day. Mm-hmm. And when that stops, then your company stops. And that's where we kind of get into the hacking aspect of it, right? Mm-hmm. Anything that's going to affect these systems and threaten that day rate is going to affect the company's bottom line.
Oh, yeah.
And so why is it even a threat right now, right? You talk to any CISO at a company, or a CIO or a CTO, and I'm sure they could regale you with amazing IT projects they've done that have upgraded their cybersecurity posture and everything like that. But if you look at their industrial processes, their industrial networks, more likely than not, it's going to be the inverse of what's on the enterprise side. And that's not necessarily the fault of that CISO or CIO or CTO, more so than it is just the state of the industry as it stands today. If you go down 225 in Houston, you can't throw a rock without hitting a plant that is probably older than 30 years old. Mm. You know, a lot of these plants are legacy plants. They're brownfield plants. There's some new ones being built. Granted, they're going to have cutting edge cybersecurity technology baked into that new greenfield project. And that's fantastic. But these old ones, like I said, getting back to that day rate, they've got that revenue goal they have to hit that day. So should we spend time on taking our plant off process? Are we going to take our wellhead off process? Are we going to stop our cryo facility to go and implement some of these, you know, cybersecurity protocols? And honestly, there's that, that's the thought, and that doesn't necessarily, you know, relate to the truth either. Right.
Okay.
So we have, you know, especially not so much in the upstream, but market, but in the midstream and downstream markets, a lot of these facilities will have planned shutdown turnarounds, and you want to see, you know, boys in hard hats, you know, going to work and doing some doing God's work. I think you go take a look at any one of these facilities when they're in a shutdown turnaround. You see boys working harder than you've ever seen in your entire life because they know. They've only got a certain amount of time to do upgrades, to do maintenance, and to do anything that can and should be done to this facility so they can get back on process making money for their company.
Oh, yeah. Always takes longer than I think, too.
Something always goes wrong.
Yeah, yep.
The unknown unknowns, right? I'm getting my master's right now in IT project management, and one of the courses I just took was risk management. And well, okay, so what do you do if you have an unrealized risk and it presents itself? And it's just like, well, you know, you
deal with it.
You got to take a bite out of the sandwich sooner or later. So the quicker you do it, the quicker you can fix it. And you know, so with the importance of keeping these facilities on process, it affects a lot of the systems. Some of those systems aren't going to be able fixable until you are shut down. Right? That goes back to your automation control system, right? And this is probably the not-so-secret that's out there about some of these facilities. You've got some of these facilities that are running programs off of a Windows XP machine.
Wow.
Okay? Something that's been tossed out by Microsoft. Even when Microsoft first, this is how much people love that operating system. When Microsoft first announced that they're going to discontinue support for XP, you know, everybody just kind of threw their hands up and like, oh, this was the best OS ever. You're abandoning us. And they're like, oh, okay. Microsoft came back and like, we'll support it for a little bit longer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I even remember that.
Oh, yeah.
That was a big ordeal.
Who didn't love XP, right?
Yeah.
But when they withdraw support, they're not doing anything patching that bad boy to keep it from any bugs that could open up a vulnerability. And if you think about just, there's a reason why they call it a computer virus, because it spreads. So if you have one node or one controller, one computer, one server that's affected by a virus, it's going to spread to another one, and so on and so on and so on. And so,
I didn't realize that the operating systems themselves, like Microsoft in that case with XP, is too responsible for doing like bug patches. I thought that's why we always had like the, you know, like the Kaspersky or the Norton security, you know, it was some type of antivirus. That was the response, you know, that's where you got the patches and the fixes and the preventative measures. But the operator or the, well, I guess the operating system, the owner, Microsoft or whatever, they actually do some of that themselves too. So when they discontinue your support, it leaves it vulnerable.
Absolutely. If there's anything that is left unpatched or open, and an unsupported piece of software, then it's going to be exploited. It's just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And that's why I don't know, part of me likes this business so much is because it is, you are continually challenging yourself against the bad guys.
Yeah.
Okay? it is a constant struggle to find leverage against whoever it is that is writing malicious software out there.
Yeah.
And you know that's one of the reasons I like it. Always looking for the next way. Okay, how can we defeat this threat? There's something out there that's now taking. I mean, just to give you this little kind of segue into one of the things I also wanted to talk about is that there are some people out there that are savvy enough to understand a control system, and that's a pretty tight knit small community. If you know somebody that's in the process control business, process control engineer, even some chemical engineers. A lot of INE techs, all right, that they're not, they're far and few between, you know. Okay. They, I, back when I was with Honeywell, and well, even now that I'm with Mission Secure, I've had one client that was able to hop around at a few different companies, and I'd ask him, like, okay, why all you're doing is, you know, jumping back and forth between Clear Lake and Pasadena. What's what? It's just like, well, this other company keeps offering me more money. Yeah. I mean, why should I turn that down? And he's absolutely right. He's got a skill that's in high demand for process control that is making those companies a lot of money.
That's interesting. So is that like completely different than any other, I guess, like IT degree?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it absolutely is. You know, you if you can, we call them unicorns right now. If you can find somebody that has a great OT and an IT background, then you're going to have to pay the man to get him on your team, get him or her on your team. Mm. It's not going to be cheap. If they're doing something technical, especially in cybersecurity, I mean, gracious, those guys are going like hotcakes. If you just ask anybody that's a recruiter right now, if they can find anybody that's got an IT and an OT background for cybersecurity, good luck.
Hmm. Interesting. I didn't know there were big distinctions like that.
Oh yeah.
Huh.
Absolutely. And the reason being is that the OT guys, they want their network to work. I mean, well, a caveat is they want it to work safely, all right? I got to say that out loud because I don't want anybody to misunderstand what I mean when I say that. Safety is always first at anywhere, especially when you're dealing with contents under pressure and heat.
Yeah, or chemicals of any nature.
Oh, absolutely, right? And this is, and that's one thing I've been saying now. Cybersecurity in the industrial business is probably where safety was maybe about 20 or 30 years ago.
Oh, wow.
You can't. Yeah, right. So think about the, you know, going out to the wellhead or a cryo facility that long ago, and safety almost kind of being like an afterthought, right? Mm-hmm. Nowadays, you can't get anywhere without having your site specific done. If you're going offshore, you've got to get your dunker done. You know, I've seen roughnecks getting written up right in front of me for, you know, they had a guy didn't have his gloves on.
Mm, wow.
You know. Yeah. And so I think adoption as far as these types of programs are kind of in their infancy right now.
Hmm. Interesting. So if you know someone who's trying to figure out a career as a high schooler, maybe point them to this for any of my listeners.
Sure.
Sounds like it's going to be a good career future.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a technical minded young person that's out there, and you know you want to fiddle around with gadgets and you like networking and you like computers, go into the OT world, get all the experience you can soak up because the market's in demand for it right now.
Wow, yeah, I'm sure there's not going to be any lack of places where you could get experience.
Oh sure.
Yeah, well that's sure. Interesting, and maybe at some point you can kind of circle back around and kind of explain maybe some more about the different control systems, how they're laid out, like what all we're talking about that's vulnerable.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, like is I mean, I guess, you know, there's a difference between what we would interface as, you know, when you're looking at any of our control systems. So like in upstream oil and gas, right, you close this valve, shut in the well, you know, or turn on this compressor, you know, for midstream, or you know, whatever be the case, is more interactive, you know, like kind of like a dashboard in a sense or whatever. But you know, what all is behind that? That's where I'm super fuzzy on.
Sure, right. So what you're describing is the human machine interface, and that's just a fancy way of saying your console, your laptop, or your desktop computer that's controlling the system.
Okay.
Okay. You,
yeah.
You've got a screen that's feeding you information of what's going. Let's just say that you've got a remote well pad with about 8 wells, and all you're doing is you're trying to manage flow. Okay.
Yeah.
And let's just say for fun that you've also got custody transfer figured in there and all that kind of fun stuff. So now you're having to keep up with that information. Okay.
Yeah.
Running that well pad, you've got, you know, like I mentioned, you got custody transfer. So there's a terminal, and you've also got an RTU, or it's a remote controller, which is just a small computer that is capable of doing if-then type logic, right? It can do so many things by itself that you give it permission to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everything that is outside the boundaries of that permission scope goes back to you at the HMI as the operator.
Okay.
Okay. And so it's basically asking you, oh, hey, this procedure is outside my scope. Should I do this action? Or it may recommend actions depending on the type of system that's running it. But overall, we use the term industrial control system, right, as a broad umbrella.
And okay.
Some of these terms are used interchangeably. They're usually referencing the same thing. SCADA is a type of industrial control system. Like I said earlier, OT network, DCS, distributed control system, those are all used sometimes interchangeably. You know, if you talk to some of the purists, they don't like it, like to mix these terms. And that's fine. You know, SCADA is different from your DCS, you know, technically. And so when we're speaking to these types of folks, it's important to keep your terms straight. But really, it gets back to, I'm trying to do a process remotely, and I'm trying to do as much of it automatically as I can possible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where the cyber security aspect plays into it is, I've got to keep this process running as efficient as possible for as long as possible, so my company or I can make money, depending on whatever it is that I'm trying to do. Because of that, the upgrading of these systems has been negatively affected. It is in some cases cost prohibitive to upgrade. If it's your DCS or if it's your SCADA system or something to that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you kind of get back into, geez, why do we have a machine that's running Windows XP? And that's just some of the, I started on this point earlier and I got sidetracked by my own thoughts. My apologies. But when I mentioned that some of the black hat types, the bad guys write malicious hardware, some of them actually have a pretty good understanding of a process control network, of an ICS. And there have been cases where there has been malicious software written specifically to attack a safety system within this ICS network.
Oh, wow.
The first time I read about one of these types, it drained the blood out of my face. Because even when we're trying to do everything right on site, accidents still happen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are refineries that blow up, you know, not even, geez, within the last 5 years, I think we've had some blow ups.
Yeah.
Just as recent. And this is with, you know, HS&E being, you can't turn in any direction without seeing an HS&E poster, right? So it's in your face, but still some of these accidents happen. But so even on a good day, we still run into a threat of somebody saying, oh, yeah, that system that you have specifically to do a controlled shutdown of your plant so everybody doesn't blow up in a 5 mile radius.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're gonna infect that with a virus and good luck.
Yeah.
You know, that's just a bone chilling type of reality.
Well, and what's scary too is, you know, what's done that's not obvious, right? It's obvious if someone comes in and actually, you know, just shuts down the place or causes an issue right from the beginning. But, you know, mm-hmm. what if they're, and you can tell me if this is, I assume it's possible, but I assume that's kind of what you're talking about. But, like, you know, what if they come in the background and, you know, mess with the logic of one of those, you know, the emergency procedures, right? And that it just makes it all the worse.
Right, right. And because there is some of, there is this kind of standoff in some cases, not all cases. I've seen plenty of companies that have a great relationship between their IT and their OT folks, and I think it's only going to continue to get better. But in some cases, there is a standoff between your OT guys and your IT guys. You know, mm-hmm. the OT guys, hey, man, we got to keep this baby running, okay? This is the lifeblood of our company. I can't deal with an IT guy coming down and wanting to do, you know, XYZ maintenance on my server right now. I don't have time for it.
Yeah.
You know? And so there is kind of created in some places this standoff, but as we continue to go forward, I think, the OT, what there's a phrase out there called IT OT integration. I keep thinking that these two sides are going to continue to taking steps towards the middle, and trying to help one another out, because a lot of it is very similar. You know, if you look at the threat landscape right now, the type of people that are writing, either they're writing malicious software or they're just trying to gain control of something. There's mm-hmm. a myriad of reasons why somebody would do that, right? If you look at, you know, just your typical teenage savant that's in a mom's basement, just trying to mess around, play genius games. Okay. That kind of person's out there as well. You could have a disgruntled employee that still has access that goes back and tries to affect the process control network. Sometimes you've got the politically motivated type hackers. They, you know, if you've ever heard the term hacktivist, that refers to those folks. I mean, yeah. And you've got organized enterprise, just same type of folks that would be behind any type of corporate espionage if it's just gathering data. We've seen that attack a few times where nobody is trying to do anything malicious to the site. We're just trying to steal information, you know, and that because, hey, stock prices, you know, can rise and fall on that type of info. It's very lucrative information for somebody. I mean, heck, right now, even within the contractors and the operators, there's still some back and forth on who owns data from a well.
Yeah, well.
Right? And if you've got these two, these two camps that have a very vested interest in playing nice together, you see them still kind of squaring off like, okay, well, yeah, this may be your rig, but it's my data. Well, no, we're going to share it. Well, no, we're not. I mean, just think of if we've got major companies that are doing that, that should tell you how important this data is right now.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And so, yeah. And then, of course, you've got your tier one nation states that are, you know, releasing malicious software out either for a political reason or some type of trying to control a market or something to that effect.
That's interesting. I never really thought about the data being fought over and stuff too much. And I'm sure there's also like, you know, a camp that also just wants, you know, like if you're talking about like operators, right? And wanting, you know, what's public and, you know, what should be public for everybody to see, you know, like offshore kind of stuff, you know what reservoirs are there, you know, or what's actually, does that belong to the company? You know, because they've spent the millions or billions, however much money to get that data for themselves. So interesting.
And you know that, like I said, some of the attacks. And here's the other part, and I'm going to sound like a broken record now, and to any of your fans and listeners out there, I apologize.
You're fine.
If I've been beating this drum too much, but you know, some of these ICS networks that haven't been upgraded, you know, are the same target that a malicious attack targeted maybe 5 years ago, but since they haven't done any upgrading, oh yeah, well, we can just recycle that virus. We don't have to spend any money on renewing it. You know,
For sure.
And which is wild to think about, because any type of data breach that you hear, I'm going to beat up Target again. But if, you know, say if Target has another data breach, okay, well, you know, if you've got a credit card, let's go back in and check. Okay, no, okay, nothing was taken. Okay, that's fine. Okay, well, I'm going to change my password now. I'm going to run, you know, whatever, Norton antivirus on my computer again and all that. Okay, and make sure I'm patched on all my programs. Okay, now we're good. We're set.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't necessarily, that type of patch management isn't necessarily is happening.
ICS, just take it to another one of their beer companies and, you know, and just release it to them. The same thing. That's crazy that's not being guarded against always, you know, some are, but, and whenever we're talking about, you know, like these types of attacks, and I think you previously also mentioned, you know, that they can basically anything can be attacked along the way, but is it more so like the big brains behind it, like the data centers or wherever all this is pulling into, or is it more of the, you know, like in a chemical plant or anything oil and gas wise, could it be like at the wellhead? Like, I mean, like where are they kind of getting in at? I mean, like you said, it could spread, right? So it could spread through the rest of the system, but like, is there a common entry point or what?
I'll tell you this. All right. So, There's a practice in the cyber industry, cybersecurity industry called pen testing, and we say pen testing because it's, you know, the reality of it is it's a penetration test, and you know that term can have some other connotations. Pen testing, so it's socially acceptable to say out loud, you know, like what my company does with a pen test, we'll go into a facility, and it's you've got to know that when you bring in a pen testing outfit, if it's my company or if it's anybody else, they're going to get through somehow. And the point of it is not to make you look dumb or to make your cybersecurity program look dumb. It's to point out the flaws in it. And that's fine. That's why we go to the doctor, right? That's why we get a dental checkup. All right. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just showing you where the improvements need to be made.
Yeah.
And it can be, think about this. All right. At your company, when was the last time any one of the folks there patched did the patch upgrades for your printer?
No, I have no idea.
Probably never, right? Because that's one of those things where you just want to turn on and forget it. As long as it's working, why do we need to do anything about it? Okay. Well, the printer, and I say this because it's so easy for us to pick on, is one of the things that people think is innocuous. And you will get folks on the OT side that will take a patch cord. I'm sorry, not a patch cord. I'm thinking about guitar now. They'll take an Ethernet cord over to from their console there that's hooked into the ICS network, and they'll plug that thing into a printer that's on their enterprise network, and they have just effectively bypassed their DMZ firewalls.
Huh.
Right? So, like I said, we pick on printers because that's easy for us. That's one of the things.
Wow. I would have never thought of that either. Like, you'd expect something that you buy, you know, to just be perfect in terms of, like, you know, not posing a security risk, at least. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. And so anytime, that's what I say, you know, don't be afraid of the term pen testing or getting a cyber assessment done, because it's, you know, you got to go into that thing knowing that we're going to tell you your baby's ugly.
Yeah.
that's fine. I mean, you've got guys that have been working in some of these plants, or they've been working for a company for 20, 30 years. And as far as they know, their efficiency has never been better. They're making fantastic product for the market. And now we got to come and tell them, like, well, okay, you're right. You're making fantastic efficiencies. You're doing great with your product. Unfortunately, you've got some issues over here that need to be dealt with, because it's a risk that can be leveraged against you and your company, and you don't want that risk to be realized. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, we pick on printers. We can pick on if you've got any voice over internet protocol phones, VoIP. You know, we can that's a common one we can get into. And so, if it's on the network, we're going to go through systematically, and we're going to find a spot to get in.
Wow. And so how much that can, I mean, I assume pretty much anything can, like the stuff you're talking about can be remoted into. It doesn't have to be like physically bypassed or, you know, something physically plugged into the network or like that. Spy kind of stuff.
Sometimes we'll do a pen testing without even being on site.
Oh, wow.
We'll of course, you know, when we're doing an assessment, we'll go and we'll do a walk down, because we're going to give you a network diagram that's going to be real time and up to date, right? Hmm. If we're just doing a pen test, you know, our guy may be at home, kick back and, you know, and comfort, instead of having having to fly out to the middle of the North Sea somewhere, you know?
Yeah, wow. That's crazy.
and I say that for a reason, because, and I run into this a lot. So much, in fact, that I'm almost done trying to fight the uphill battle against it. But sometimes I'll hear the term air gap. I'll hear that from a lot of folks. Oh, we're completely air-gapped. And what they mean by that is we have a complete control system that has no access in or out to the internet. And so, and some of those do exist that are out there. I will say that. I have seen one, all right? And but this one was a batch plant that was, I mean, literally they're making extreme specialty products that you buy and you order maybe 1,000 gallons mm-hmm. of this type of product. And so they can afford to do that because their plant is the size of a postage stamp, and they don't have to have anything that's connected. All right. So bully on them. However, if you are not this particular plant that I'm talking about, there's no way that your plant is air gapped. I guarantee that there is a connection to the internet somewhere. In fact, one of the folks that we went in and did an assessment for, we showed them their network, one of their network diagrams, and we said, guys, you thought you were air-gapped. I think this would be better described that you're an internet provider. You're an ISP.
You know? Wow.
This is how much data is coming in and out that you didn't have any information about. You didn't even know what was going on.
Wow.
Let's work together and let's see if we can kind of change the odds in your favor just a little bit.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So I if you're talking to anybody out there who says, yeah, our facility is completely air-gapped, I think you should challenge them on that, just because the risk to your facility is probably going unrealized at this time.
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. A lot of times, you know, like I said at the beginning, like, you know, we wouldn't really think we're a target till it happens. But
sure.
I'm hopeful that, you know, people listening to this, I'm confident we got some people in, you know, higher up positions or whatever that might be listening to this podcast or have friends that, you know, maybe are kind of over a plant or whatever, that they kind of take these things seriously. And also, you know, you don't have to have a plant, right? I mean, even I know that like the big operators and stuff in our industry, you know, take a lot of precautions and have the, like the pen testing and stuff done. I've actually heard of some of that being done, but, think this over. You might need this.
Yeah, it's one of those things. And, you know, it's, when we were talking a little bit earlier before the show started, you mentioned that the asset insurance companies that are out there, for one of your shows out that you said got a lot of positive feedback, right? Mm-hmm. So I started working kind of side by side with some of the folks that are in the insurance business, mm-hmm. for some of these industrial assets. If that's your wellhead, your pad, if you've got tanks that are holding product, anything like that, they're starting to feel out whether or not they can develop policies developed around industrial cybersecurity. And if so, what do those look like? And, you know, how do you prepare for something or something in that sphere that we've seen a lot of bad things happen to? We've seen, you know, some companies, geez, poor folks over at, I won't say their name on the podcast, but there was a aluminum production facility. I mean, they had 40 million in lost production.
Wow.
And then they still had to go back and just replace every bit of hardware that was in the plant.
Wow.
Right? So you've got that operational loss on top of the, I'm sure they probably dug it out of CapEx to make up for all the hardware that they had to replace that was just utterly useless at that point.
Wow. So I didn't even think about that really. Like, you can design the viruses or these attacks or whatever to actually physically destroy like the hardware, or are they just replacing it because they don't know how to fight it, so they might as well just put all new stuff in?
It's probably a little bit of both.
Wow.
You know, they didn't want to take the risk of thinking that this, you know, this piece of hardware could still be infected, or it just might be, you know, might be on any type of effort to do it, right? You do a cost benefit analysis on it, like, okay,
yeah,
we can spend this much money on cleaning everything, reinstalling all the software and bringing it back up to where it was, or we can just get brand new software where we know everything's patched up to date and just install it.
Yeah, updated. Maybe get off
right.
Your XP, Windows XP.
Right. And you know, the other piece too is, you know, it's not just necessarily malicious software that's out there. It's folks that are actually getting in through, like I mentioned, I'm going to pick on this printer one more time, right? So So what if your patch management plan is 100%, you're up to date, there's nothing getting past it, but your password and username is still admin123. You know, I mean, or what if you've got passwords on sticky notes inside your server cabinets?
Yeah.
So at some point, it's just folks that are messing around on systems and like, okay, well, I've got a password generator program and I'm just going to keep running all the common passwords on this until I get in. And oh, by the way, so now I can take control of your industrial control system. Or if I can't take control of the entire system, which is, I'll admit, even that's kind of far-fetched, but I might be able to take control of this controller.
Yeah.
Right? I might be able to feed this controller bad information than what the transmitter's saying. I can keep telling this controller that your tank level's at 50%. Meanwhile, I've opened up your valve and your pump, and I'm going to, you know, keep pumping this baby full of product until she starts to overflow.
Yeah, wow.
Meanwhile, your controller still thinks everything is hunky-dory.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, running low.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's crazy for sure. And then something like that, you know, if we end up starting to get these types of attacks or whatever being carried out on, you know, anything related to oil and gas industry, or even these other industries, but especially oil and gas always being under fire, you know, things start happening because of cyber, you know, attacks like this, then it's going to be even harder to maintain our license to operate. And you know, and just like Colorado, that's in the forefront of like all of our minds that work here. And it's like, we're always on a kind of like a teeter totter, right? It's like, sure, that kind of stuff starts happening, it's like, it's going to be even way harder to prove that we can do things safely.
Sure. And I'm sure in the eyes in the media and maybe a lot of politicians, oil and gas is an easy target too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, let's go beat up on these folks. And then, you know, I can get some, you know, approval ratings bump or something like that. Yeah. But, you know, the reality is that this is industrial control systems can kill people, you know, and I'm going to go back to what I said earlier about this is where health and safety was, decades ago. And unfortunately it did take the death of people to make changes. When I was going through the Navy, we had a saying that the dive manual, United States Navy dive manual, is written in blood.
Mm.
And unfortunately, the same type of things can be said about safety systems. Okay, we did something this way. All right, Bubba just lost a hand last week because he did it that way.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do something different, right? And that's kind of evolved to where safety's at today. I think that, you know, I really hope this doesn't happen, but I think as more high-profile type companies, you know, Fortune 500 type companies get hacked, and some of that information that we know about anyway, I'm sure a lot of these companies have already been hacked, but they've been able to keep it under the blanket, and that's fine, because they're probably taking countermeasures at this point. But I think that's what is gonna take it to where people start taking it more seriously.
Yeah. No, that's kind of scary too, because it's like, you know, like kind of like you mentioned, like oil and gas kind of being vulnerable for like an easy target in a sense. That kind of stuff starts happening. I mean, that's an easy way to start pushing out oil and gas and making people fear it. And then like not to say that this is entirely what happened to nuclear or why nuclear is not like it is, but you know, I mean, fear can do a lot.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think you brought up a good point about nuclear power as well. I mean, that's another industrial control system. We deal with power gen as well as utilities. And, you know, it's just one of those things. We got to stay vigilant and we got to keep up our forbearance on the issue.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's a saying, if you ask anybody that's in cybersecurity, they're going to tell you this thing over and over again. There's two types of companies. There's the companies that know they've been hacked, and then there's the companies that don't know that they've been hacked.
Mm-hmm.
It all comes down to the severity of what's going on within your system. And do you have that visibility?
Yeah.
Could you even say of your well pad system, of your cryo facility, of your terminal, could you look me straight in the face and say, yeah, I know without a doubt we haven't been hacked in the last 6 months because these are my cyber program protocols.
Yeah. Well, how do you know, you know, if you've got one in there, like, kind of like we hit on earlier, like just kind of laying in the grass, right, low, maybe it's waiting on something to happen and just make the event worse, right? Or, you know, how do you know if there's something just laying, like, waiting, you know what I mean?
You're going to have to go and get some sort of network visibility assessment, vulnerability assessment done. And if you don't have any type of device that's able to do any passive inspection, right? I would stay away from, especially in the ICS business, stay away from any type of devices that are going to be actively pinging to collect data management. Another plug for my company, Mission Secure. we've got great hardware that is out there that can perform a lot of these without having to put at risk the current state of your ICS network.
Okay.
And that would be the first step. Because, and like I said, we're gonna do our assessment with our hardware, and we're gonna draw up your network diagrams and what they are in real time. That's also an interesting exercise. We're gonna tell you that, okay, yeah, your baby's ugly. This is how ugly your baby is.
Yeah, this is what it really looks like.
right. Yeah, you see this? We found a couple nodes that weren't in the network diagram that you gave us before we started. So I mean, what is it? We just found a laptop that was plugged in behind the server cap.
Yeah.
I mean, wait, whose laptop is this? Why is it, you know, what's going on? You know, so.
Sketchy.
Yeah.
I guess, like, in terms of, you know, somebody's listening to this and wanting to try, you know, hey, this is the direction we need to go or something. What's kind of, I don't know, like, timeline to get all that kind of stuff done? Like, you know, and then how, like, repeatability, like, how often? You know, I mean, does this need redone, right? Are you, you know, you get one of these pen testings done, you know, and are you good for a year, you know, like a week, you know?
Well, it's continuous, like I said, with safety. You know, it's, we don't have one safety tailgate brief and we're done for the year.
Okay.
You know, yeah. we've got a safety program. Same goes with cybersecurity. You need a cybersecurity program that's going to be ongoing and just be able to keep lockstep with the next threat that's coming down the pipe, because it's going to come. There's going to be something new that's going to happen. Yeah. And until we fundamentally change the way computing is done, which, good luck. I mean, I don't have a 10-pound brain to figure that one out. But until that's changed, then there's always going to be a threat from, you know, cyber hackers. But I would start, though, to answer your question. Sorry. I went around the block before I even answered the question. But to answer your question, I would start with a vulnerability assessment to take a look at what your network is actually doing. I would not get a pen test the first thing out the gate, because to me that's gonna be a waste of money, because it's not gonna tell you anything you don't already know.
Okay.
Yeah, we can get into your network. Okay. Well, geez, I already knew that. Yeah, you can get it. Okay. So let's go get an assessment. Oh, let's just start with the assessment. Let's just start with that, and we'll see where. Well, first off, we'll take a look if you've got any folks that are on your network, and we can probably kick them off while we're doing the assessment as well. And then from there, you need to get a secure design going. Some type of, okay, this is what our network is right now. What's going to make this better? What kind of hardware improvements can we make right now? What type of cyber hygiene protocols can we adopt, as far as, like, if you're talking like role-based access type programs, you know, like, oh, we just hired, you know, we spoke about some of the youngins trying to get into the business right now. Okay, we just hired young Timmy. Well, let's give him access to everything within the ICS. Nah, let's get Tim the access that he needs to do his job.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, our big poobah, our process control engineer, our process control manager. Okay, yeah, no, he probably needs access to everything within the plant, because, you know, he's running the process for everything. He's making our product. And then I'll even say conversely, all right, like, we've got our plant manager over here. I don't think our plant manager needs access to everything either.
Yeah.
I'll probably get slapped in the mouth by maybe a couple of plant managers that were process control guys or Kimmies, and they're in their background like, what the hell you want? This is my plant. But I'm just saying, for a good, you know, our back program, you probably need to take a look at who's got access, along with, hey, you know, so and so went to company X last week. We need to terminate all his credentials.
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff that goes into it. And then as soon as you've got that in place, you've got a manager that can manage that program, then you just need to keep going forward with it.
Yeah. Okay. And I would imagine, too, it's not always about, you know, suspecting the employee of doing something, but it's also, they're just another way in, right? The more people that have access to, like, everything, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. And honestly, and this isn't going to be something a lot of people want to hear either, is you're more likely to be infected by one of your employees than any type of malicious actor.
Hmm.
Especially if you've got an open USB policy for your company. You're basically just asking for your own employees to infect your system.
Okay. Now, does that just mean, like, you know, you can use an USB and it's not tracked and all that, or?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, okay. If all your USB ports are unlocked or whatever the program may call for, and
gotcha.
So you've got folks that are bringing in their own hard drives from home that have been inserted and God knows where, they've got God knows what on it, and now it's on your system, you know, I mean, there you go.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's something common. Well, I don't know how common across the industry it is, but the two majors that I've worked for have both had. I mean, it's, you have to be careful even plugging in. It's so monitored and stuff. And I would say a lot of the bigger companies are probably have that down. But
Oh, right.
Maybe that's
right.
Something that a lot of other ones wouldn't ever think of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can do easy. The easy answer is, you know, we've got to know, you know, external hard drive policy. All of our USB ports are locked down. Step above that might be have some sort of kiosk system where we can at least scan everything before it's inserted. Or, you know, we've gone to a point where we actually have a managed system, mm-hmm. and, you know, we can deny access to anybody. We can have, you know, certain people have access for external hard drives, and, you know, things like that. I mean, it runs the scope of what anything you can do.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious, you kind of mentioned a little bit, you know, about like the future, you know, of maybe this until this might not be. Is there a future where there's a different type of computing, as you kind of alluded to, where, you know, the cybersecurity and the hacking and everything is either stopped or it's a completely different ball game?
Oh, geez, I am not the guy to ask that question. I would love to be a futurist or somebody who can, you know, see the next 50 to 100 years on this, but that's my reality, is that it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a back and forth between us and the bad guys forever. Okay. And until, you know, of course something changes, and that's got to be the way fundamentally that computing is done right now. But
yeah. Have you seen much about like the quantum computing stuff? Have you read into that much about that? I assume you probably have way more than I have.
Oh, I mean, I've scratched the surface of it. Honestly, like I'll say, yeah, I don't have it. I don't have a 10-pound brain.
Right. You know, I scratched the surface of a lot too, and I don't hardly remember any of it. But I was curious, one of the things I saw, like some video, and of course, you never know, like some YouTube video, like you never know exactly what to believe. That's funny because we have a YouTube channel. But anyways, they're saying like, okay, well, whoever builds the quantum computing first, you know, like if it's a bad guy, we're all in trouble, because we'll all like basically be hacked right off the bat, you know, all this kind of stuff. And like, oh, I don't know. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. We're all waiting for Skynet to become aware, and you know, yeah, that's gonna be great.
Yeah. Well, who knows? Who knows what all the future of this brings? But definitely a pretty eye-opening material and episode that you've thrown together for us. But did we pretty much flush out your what you wanted to get out, or do we have anything left that you wanted to tackle yet? Or
no, that's about all I wanted to get out there. And you know, thanks for letting me come on the show and, you know, plug the company.
Man.
I think that we've got some of the best tech that's out there right now, and if anybody's looking for that first step, you know, just hit us up on the webpage, missionsecure.com.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
We'll help you out.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Keep him and MSI in mind. If this is something that, like, I don't know who demographics for podcasts are like basically non-existent. So I don't know who all like what all positions you guys have listening and everything, unless you reach out to me, which I'd love what people do. But keep this in mind. It's definitely something that isn't going to go away. It seems pretty critical too. So keep him in mind. Keep Matt, and of course, you can always find him on LinkedIn as well. So it's where we've connected. So, but yeah, thanks so much for being on this episode, taking the time out of your day to record this.
Good deal. Thanks, Derek. You have yourself a good one.
All right. Thanks, Matt. And thanks everybody for listening. And like I said, we'll look forward to next week's episode, episode 40. Some exciting things are going to happen, and we'll catch you guys in the next episode. Take care.